Daniel Summerhays graces us with his presence. Here's a guy who is starting to really sniff those Sundays, those late tea times on Sundays. It's kind of what you grow up dreaming about doing. If you're Daniel and you had an unbelievable career at Brigham Young University, first team All-American, consecutive state amateur titles at 16 and 17. Daniel, welcome to Morning Drive with TK. Thanks for spending a few minutes here on a much-deserved week off.
Yeah, thanks so much. Great to be on.
So I'm going to take you back in time. Read about this morning. So you're meeting with Emily, now your wife. There's tears and burritos, according to the story, at Taco Time in Kaysville. And you're giggling.
Right.
You're a sophomore. You're back in 2005. The week before your wedding, you wanted to join the PGA Tour. And certainly you had the game to do it. So talk me through that conversation. And what was it, a burrito, or what was it?
It was probably a little extra jalapeno. I always loved golf. I always dreamt of, playing in the U.S. Open. I always loved the competition, but I never really thought about, this is what I'm actually going to do to make money to be a job. And, when you get engaged, when you get married, you got to start planning for the future. And just seemed like a really good fit for me. I was concerned about a couple issues. One, would I have the game? Two, do you have the resources? Three, Sunday play was an issue for me as well. So there were a lot of factors, but I got a lot of good advice from a lot of different people. And as we were at that talk of time, we both felt like, okay, this is the road we need to go. And there have been some ups and downs, but for the most part, I've had a pretty amazing path to the PGA Tour.
No doubt. And contrary to popular, belief is, well, I guess you are right in the middle of your wheelhouse of your career. I mean, you're what, 32, so there's many more years, and the confidence is starting to come. I mean, you talked about the 65, which I'll get to, but you hit on something I wanted to kind of stop my thought process here. Tell me about how you and Emily and maybe your family, how did you rectify the Sunday play? Because not only do you want to play on Sunday, you want to be playing last on Sunday.
Right. My dad was a huge, huge help. My dad, he was a good college golfer. He was captain of the men's golf team at the University of Utah. And I think during his junior year, they were playing a tournament on Sunday, and he just had the really strong impression that Sunday play wasn't for him. He wasn't, so he kind of committed that day to never play on Sunday again. And for him, that was his decision. And he taught us, that Sunday is a special day, but it was going to be our decision. And, I had dreams. I grew up, wanting to be a doctor, wanting to be a surgeon. I loved watching TLC, Trauma, Life in the ER, and
right.
The surgery, all that kind of stuff. It was fascinating to me. I wanted to be, there were so many things that I wanted to be besides golf. And as I got thinking about it, if I'm going to be a doctor, I'm probably going to have to work on some Sundays. I'm probably going to, there's so many noble professions that do require some Sunday work. And after getting a lot of advice and things like that, I thought that it was the correct personal decision for me. Not for everybody, but for me it was the right decision.
Right, and I love the, your dad's approach, that's how it was for him, but you guys got to make your own decisions based on what feels right to you, at the way down deep. Steve Young, obviously, he's not doing what he's doing if he's not playing on Sundays. But is it also like a possibility, like when you're playing on Sunday, you're also carrying a message there. And so in a way, it also serves what you want to accomplish in the big picture as well, isn't it? Isn't that part of it?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like my job's a great platform to express my love for other people and my love of my profession. There are definitely certain things that I'm able to do to remind myself that it's a special day. You know, Tiger has his Sunday red. I have my Sunday white. I always wear a plain white, you know, polo shirt on, collared shirt on Sunday. Helps remind me that it is a different day for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the later tea times I can get, I can usually catch a church service, you know, Sunday morning somewhere. So, like, on this last Sunday in Washington, D.C., you know, I had a 1 o'clock start, and I was able to go catch a sacrament service. So there are a lot of things and efforts that I try and do to remind myself that this is the right path for me, but I can still make it work.
Absolutely. I think that's very well thought out, and again, you know, responding to those inner voices, which is really all we have, you know, whether just, you know, that's a great explanation of the whole thing. So here you are now, coming off the Tide for 21st at the National, another $65,000. It's chump change now. You're up over $1.2 million, 3 years in a row making more than $1 million. 71st in world rankings with a bullet, 48th in FedEx Cup. So you're kind of right there. So my question to you is, how does it feel to be right where you've always dreamed? I know there's a little bit of pressure of trying to get that first win, you know, whatever that is. But how does it feel to be Daniel Summerhays these days?
Yeah, you know, actually on my flight home yesterday, I watched a great movie, Eddie the Eagle.
Great.
And it was really neat. The one conversation in the movie that really struck a chord with me was when he's going up to the 90-meter jump, and he's with the flying fin, Maddie.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, you and me are much more alike than you think we are. You know, and he talks about how all the other people, they're playing for winning or losing, for the medals. He's like, I'm trying to do my best. You're trying to do your best. And a lot of times I've gotten caught up in, oh, man, when am I going to get my first PGA Tour victory? When am I going to, you know, when am I going to get over the hump? And the truth that I'm starting to realize is that I'm already over the hump.
Exactly.
I'm giving my best every day out there. And as long as I'm doing that, as long as I'm working hard, I'm working smart, I'm trying to train things the right way, it's not going to matter whether, you know, I win or lose. But the satisfaction in knowing that you had peace of mind, that you gave it your best effort, that you performed how you wanted to perform, that's the important thing. Sunday at the U.S. Open, I came up short. But I had a lot of satisfaction knowing that I felt very aware out there.
Mm-hmm.
Things didn't go my way. Putts didn't go in. A few shots just barely ended up in the rough. But I had peace of mind. I had calm in my heart. And I felt like I was able to perform, for the most part, how I wanted to perform. And that is a victory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm continuing to learn that, because we put expectation and pressure on ourselves to win or lose, to succeed or fail. But in the end, we're just trying to do our very best and perform at our own highest level.
Yeah, I mean, that's very well said. You already have arrived. The winning come. You know, they always say that, like, an overnight success takes 10 years. I mean, you know, it's all building blocks. And you're doing every right thing in the next, you know, sometime, you know, maybe you'll win a tournament, you say, I'm not playing my best, but the breaks will go your way, and, hey, you'll be holding the trophy on Sunday. So I think that's very well put together. We're with Daniel Summerhays, PGA Pro out of Fruit Heights, Utah, former All-American at Brigham Young University. And by the way, folks may think that Cherry Hill is what Fruit Heights is. No, it's Daniel Summerhays. Then Cherry Hill's number two, right? You are the attraction of Fruit Heights.
I don't know. We were there with my family a couple weeks ago, and it was the dragon slide was a hit.
So. Oh yeah, no, it's all good over at Cherry Hill. I agree with you there. So tell me about that Friday. I think it was Friday with all the rain. That 65 second round 60. You had to put up a number to make the cut. And what was that sort of that a little bit of I've arrived after that round, because it was magical. And you talk about putts going in. I mean, everything was. I think you chipped in. I mean, you had one of those the Priest and Caddyshack rounds where you were smiling all the way through. And was that maybe another level of where you go, I got this a little bit. I'm okay in this big fish bowl.
Yeah, the hardest championship in the world. The hardest golf course in America, the best players in the world, coming off of an early morning 18. I'm on my last 18, my last 9, and come in at, in 30 is...
That's ridiculous.
It's a confidence boost. I hit so many good shots late in the day, rolled in some really nice putts. It was a game changer for sure. It's something that I need to really store and steer into the memory bank so I can go back on it. This last week at Congressional golf is a crazy game. I mean, I had my worst putting week probably since I played Congressional 3 years ago. I don't know if it's the greens that don't fit my eye or whatnot, but. You go through these ups and downs, but you have to have an anchor round or an anchor tournament that you can go back to and say, "Hey, that's all right."
Yep.
I'm gonna have some down times, but I think a good phrase for me. I actually heard somebody say, "You're only as good as your last round," and I kind of cringed when I heard it this last time. So I was like, "No." You're as good as your best round.
Right.
That's your potential. And I think my mindset starting to change that way, because that was, tied for the lowest round at Oakmont this year. And it's definitely a memory bank round.
Yeah, no doubt. It was fun watching you, because the body language was all, you were in the flow, and it was, you weren't, you knew where you were. You knew your limitations. You just played every shot. It was just a lot of fun. One of the things I really love about the PGA Tour is, they're rivalries, and I'm sure they're guys that other guys don't like. But by and large, when the young guys or the guys who are trying to break through, when there's a great round or something, you hear about it, don't you? I mean, everybody's playing the golf course, essentially. So there's no, there's no hard fouls. There's no, bodying up on people. There's no way to really build any kind of enmity, but when people who are new to this, maybe new to the playing late and putting 65s up in the U.S. Open, the kind of support you get from within the tour is unbelievable.
Yeah, everybody's really cheerleading for everybody else. I think when you get to the highest level, you want everybody to perform their best so that it stretches and pushes you, and that's what I feel like we're doing. We're cheerleading each other. I had a really good time playing with Lee Slattery from England in those first two rounds. And, we were both playing well. We were kind of feeding off each other, prodding each other on. Even up to the round on Sunday, I played with Brandon Grace. I played with him quite a few times, become good friends with him. We're there, excited for each other, cheering each other on. I made a, 7-8 footer for birdie on 17 to kind of get back into the top 10. He fist bumped me coming off the green. We're at that highest level. It's not hoping the other guy fails so that I can rise. It's let's rise together and see how good we can get.
Right. Yeah, I remember that round. I remember him. I could tell you guys. And that really does make a difference, doesn't it? When you're you know, when you guys are both playing well, obviously it lifts it. But when there's a comfort level and you're friends and there's, you know, you're laughing, and it does. I mean, that's, there's so much pressure, but if you can laugh a little bit, that, that sort of breaks that that cycle of concern and worry and what's the next shot going to be. But you're smiling, and it just, I could tell you're having a good time.
Yeah, no question.
So what's up now these days? You know, you're off this week. What, off week hardly is off. I know that. But so what are you doing back in Utah? And I know that Royal Troon awaits. Is that you're good for that?
I'm currently an alternate.
Okay.
So the RNA, they're still playing their cards pretty close to their chest. I haven't really let us in the loop very much.
When will you know? Like, how does it play out?
Yeah, I'm still in the waiting game. They haven't announced even how the process of alternates and all that stuff works out. This week I'm definitely waiting. I'm currently, you know, I'm driving down to Thanksgiving Point right now, going to help out Johnny and Todd Miller with the American Indian Services Pro-Am.
Oh, that'll be great.
So got in late last night and headed down. The job doesn't stop, you know.
I know. Well, that's what you signed up for. That's
it is. I'll be probably play some golf with my boys and relax around the house, sit around the fire pit a little bit, have some good family time, and then next week I was scheduled to play the Greenbrier, but the devastation.
Oh, it was amazing. That's terrible.
Flooding there, canceled the tournament, rightfully so. So I'll have a 2-week break here at home and give me a chance to enjoy my favorite place in the world here in Utah. There's nothing like it. I love being home. I miss it when I'm gone, and I'm gonna soak in every minute I can these next 2 weeks here at home, because after that, if I get into the British Open, it'll be 5 weeks on, one and finish to the end of the year.
What do you know about Royal Troon?
I just barely looked it up a little bit. A lot of the guys I've talked to say it's a really good course, good fair test. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that I can get in and put another major under my belt.
Yeah, no doubt. So I've noted that you've been on all sides of the BYU-Utah rivalry. I'm sure there's like 1,000 family stories about, you know, blue or red or whatever. But so you can certainly speak to the passion, and you know, it seems maybe the Sataki hire at BYU may have, you know, sort of eased some of the pressure and the angst, and you know, so it just seemed like maybe the rivalry was going a little south. But what's your family view? Like, how has it affected your life, the BYU-Utah thing? Because you really can't get away from it, and here I go bringing it up again.
Right. The, cute story. Yesterday, we're in security at the Baltimore airport, and my oldest son, Jack, he's wearing a drum and feather Utah hat, and one of the security guards says, "All right, buddy, I'm going to let you through, but only if you say go Cougars and without skipping a beat." You know, he just, "Go Cougars," you know.
With the Utah hat on, right?
With the Utah hat on. You know, the guy was thinking, "Oh, this kid, he's, you know." My wife, you know, she's a diehard Cougar. I grew up a diehard Ute. I'm a converted Cougar. My dad, he owns season tickets at both, you know.
That's both, great.
Both stadiums. I honestly root for any team that comes out of Utah. There used to be some angst growing up. I was a diehard Ute, no question. And one of my favorite stories to tell is even up till my freshman year in college, I was still just a diehard Ute. And I remember coming into an early morning practice in the old Smith Field House on campus at BYU. And I was kind of snickering, you know, to Coach Brockbank a little bit, like, "Hey, nice, the Cougs had a bad loss on Saturday." And I was like, "Hey, nice game on Saturday, huh?" and Coach, he pointed at me, he said, "Summer," he said, "you don't have to cheer for us, but don't cheer against us." and it kind of stopped me in my tracks right there. And he said, you know, we're only playing golf because of the football and basketball teams and what they, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so once you're out of school, and you know the people, you know the faculty, it's impossible not to love it.
Right.
And that's what happened to me. And so any time I get a chance to cheer for both Utah and BYU, it's a great thing.
That's a great that whole rip should be frozen in time, and to explain the rivalry, because there's a lot of peripheral, you know, battles, especially with Twitter now and social media, and it gets nasty. But at the heart of it, you know, you are who you are, and you feel how you feel. But you know, you understand both sides, and it's just, that was very well put, Daniel. I'm going to cut you loose here. Go enjoy your time at Thanksgiving Point. That's a diabolical course, Johnny. You know, there's some devil in Johnny, because, you know, it's tough enough to get to the greens, and then you get there and you got a putt.
All right, exactly.
Well, go hit it straight. Continued success. We'll be following you. Hopefully, a Royal Troon, the Open Championship is in your future, but certainly a lot of Sunday play is in your future. Congratulations on the progress so far. We'll be following you, and keep up the good work. Thank you so much for joining us here this morning on The Morning Drive.
Awesome. Thanks, Tom.